have responsibility to the idea that the public across the Tobe to gather around the farm for everything that she does, but especially with this initiative, both the workplace aloha series as well as the senior seminars, which will be a related series as well, which we'll be announcing just next week, Bezrat Hashem, for all of her efforts, not just for the entire student body, but also make sure that you guys can have a special opportunities, especially in your last semester, to really to learn to be together and to prepare together for life after. And without further ado, we just always thank Rabbi Leibowitz for everything he does, and we'll thank him again later in the base measures, but not taking any more of his time. Okay. Rabbi Leibowitz.
All right, thank you very much, Ravazi. It's great to be back here in Stern. It's great to see all of you. This is a series. Which part of the series is this? This is number one, the first one. Okay, so I guess we could try to solve all the world's problems, and then you won't need part two, part three, four. But I was told to focus specifically on, and you'll tell me if this is where you want to keep the conversation, because you know, we can go wherever you want to go with it. But I was told to focus specifically when it comes to going into the workplace on proper gedarim about socializing with male coworkers, with non-Jewish coworkers, teaching about Jewish culture and mitzvos to non-Jews. How do you relate to the fact that you are Jewish when you're among a lot of people who are not Jewish? And for many of you, this may be your first exit from the cloistered environment of an entirely Jewish community. And three, to discuss making a Kiddush Hashem and being careful that people should perceive Jews properly. So that was my assignment. So is that what you came for? Are we good? Yeah. Okay. So that was the assignment. I apologize. I'm not projecting as much as I normally do. I'm just getting over some sort of. I don't think I'm contagious or anything anymore. So don't worry about that. Or at least, you know, anyone be on the first row doesn't have to worry about it, I guess. But I'll try my best over here as I struggle my way through. So curious. How many of you are in Sims? Okay, so because I mean there are different types of non-Jewish workplaces, and those who are in Yeshiva College, not in Sims, like what are the majors? Pre-health. What's the computer science? A lot of computer science. So there's not much socializing goes on in computer science. you work from home. You sit behind a computer. It's a you know. There's a certain we'll try to talk about a number of different things. How many of you, by a show of hands, have heard of the book Making It All Work? Okay, so there's a fellow, Rabbi Ari Wasserman, who's a wonderful Talmud Chacham, and his brother happens to be the dean of the Seisim School of Business. Noam Wasserman, and Rabbi Ari Wasserman wrote a book originally called Making It Work, which is about halacha in the workplace and hashkafa in the workplace, and he figured that it was a necessary guide for Bnei Torah who were going to enter the workplace and didn't really know how to behave in the workplace. And then, like almost immediately after putting out Making It Work, he realized that he missed half the population, and the half of the population that deals with much more serious questions than the first half of the, you know, than his first book. So he put out another book shortly thereafter, not called Making It Work, called Making It All Work. Because in general, when women are making it work, they're also making everything work. They're also running the household and running everything else. So he called Making It All Work. And it happens to be a very strong practical guide. Not that every sentence in there is practical for everybody and is going to relate to whatever situation you're in, but if you're looking for ideas about how to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, so he has a chapter about being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in the workplace, where a lot of what he writes in the book is not his own writing. He just interviewed a lot of women, a lot of people in different fields, in different industries who have been successful, and they told the stories about how they were Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, what sorts of gedarim they set up, you know, how they handle dealing with a variety of circumstances. So I would strongly recommend that book. It happens to be just a very practical guide in that sense. I think it's also important that you have classes like this, meaning Lav Dafka me, but I'm saying classes that where you start to visualize scenarios and you start to think about things. Because a lot of times when you're in a situation and being in the situation is the first time you ever thought about that situation, it could be very disorienting and you're not going to know how to react. But if you've already played it out in your mind beforehand several times, like, oh, when this comes up, I know this is what I'm supposed to do, or here are my three options of what I'm supposed to do. Just to give an example, not in the field of business, but in the field of medicine. So I was talking to Talmidim a number of years ago who were pre-med, and I said, you know, when you're doing your rounds and you're doing your residency, so at some point you're going to be on a on an OB residency, and there may be a procedure where they're going to offer one of the residents to do just one snip or one something that will make it that a woman will not be able to have children anymore, right? There are procedures that women go through so that they don't have to worry about birth control and that they'll just never be able to have children. Now, to perform such a procedure on a human being or even an animal is an issur d'oraisa. You're not allowed to perform such a procedure. But if you're the resident and the chief resident says, oh, who wants to, we're mechabed you with this procedure, so you'll feel overwhelmed. You'll feel like, how can I say no? They're telling me to do it. But if you've already played this out in your mind in advance, oh, this is what happens. And when they ask me, I'll say, no, thank you. You'll point to the student next to you who's clearly not Jewish and say, why don't you try them, or something like that. You've already played out in your mind exactly how you're going to handle it. It will. It tends to work out a lot better. That's true of a lot of things in life. It's not only business scenarios. A lot of times with conversations, with difficult conversations, you sort of, I'm sure you've all done this, right? You play out in your mind, okay, what am I going to say if they say this, and how am I going to, and it doesn't always play out exactly the way you plan, but still it's a very helpful thing to visualize the kinds of things that come up. So it's important to be prepared and not to be surprised. So let's go through one by one, and maybe after each section we'll stop and take questions on that section, unless that means that we're not going to get past section one. So let's start with the section on Gedarim, specifically about socializing with non-Jewish and male co-workers, including settings involving alcohol. So first thing, let me take the alcohol off the table right off the top. There are actually surim in Shulchan Aruch about drinking alcohol together with non-Jews. Rav Shechter happens to be extremely machmir. He thinks it's even about drinking coffee together with non-Jews. He thinks it's even in a non-Jewish coffee house, like just going to Starbucks and having a coffee. Most poskim are not quite that machmir about the coffee part, but certainly drinking alcohol is something that should not be entertained in any sort of professional setting. That's not so, whether you work for a Heimische company, whether you work for corporate America, doesn't make a difference. Alcohol should not be something that should be involved. There are formal isurim involved, and it's also a really, really dumb idea. So that's, let's just take that part, that off the table. If the chevra is going out for drinks, you don't have to say, you don't have to say anything that's not truthful. You could just say, I'm very uncomfortable, and because there are so many alcoholics out there that can't be around alcohol, they won't push you too much on it, about being in a bar or being in a drinking scenario, because there are a lot of people that can't be around alcohol, that have an illness, that have alcoholism and can't be around alcohol, and you don't have to claim falsely to be an alcoholic, but you could certainly say that you're not comfortable to be around alcohol.
What about like going and getting like a water or like a seltzer?
So again, you're allowed to drink water and you're allowed to drink seltzer and you're allowed to drink things. I think it's a bad idea to go out for drinks in general. Sometimes there's a team has worked on a particular project and they want to celebrate, closing the deal that earned the company hundreds of millions of dollars or something like that. You have to assess whether you can say no. I would strongly, strongly encourage to see if you can say no, if that's going to be the setting. If the setting is going to be a setting where it's going to be people drinking and it's going to be getting a little too comfortable. So again, I would prefer to take alcohol off the table over here. I think that's something you should sort of gear your mind in advance, that this is just not something I do in this setting. A business setting is not meant for drinking alcohol. And again, there are actual formal halachos in Shulchan Aruch about it. Now, the more relevant issue, hopefully, is just the general everyday interactions when you work closely with people. You know, there are different segments of the frum community that have varying degrees of insistence on separation of the genders, on men and women not spending too much time together and not socializing so much together. So in the modern Orthodox community, we're perhaps less vigilant about this in our upbringing than they are in maybe the more yeshivish communities and certainly in the Hasidish communities. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're therefore well prepared for these kinds of interactions. Because a lot of times, the interactions that we've had in the past, to the contrary, they've all been so social that we've learned how to be very comfortable, and sometimes that could be a real problem, especially since when you're at work, you tend to see people at their best. You don't see anyone getting frustrated with their children and yelling, or not cleaning up after themselves, or doing things like that at work. Usually, I would imagine. Usually, it's people that are at their best, that are trying to impress, that are dressed their best, that are trying to look good. And when you see people in that context, so it's a little more dangerous in terms of the kinds of relationships that can develop. And Jewish male co-workers and from male co-workers are not going to be different, or maybe even worse in many contexts than non-Jewish co-workers, in the sense that there's a certain barrier that's not there. And there's a certain automatic comfort level. So the number one etza when it comes to all of this is remember that you're a professional, and to keep it professional. And this is true even in physical interactions. You know, I remember when I was sitting in those seats, but I was never sat on this campus. But when I was in the Sisem School of Business as a finance major, we had a question answer session with Dr. Snow, who was an accounting professor, and with Rav Mordechai Willig Shlita, one of our senior Rashi Yeshiva. And we asked all sorts of these kinds of questions about business. So the inevitable question that came up is about shaking a woman's hand, right? For a man to shake a woman's hand, a woman to shake a man's hand. So Rabbi Willig was very adamant that that you have to do it in a way that is clear, crisp, professional, meaning nothing. A firm shake, and that's it. And it just sends an entirely different message than other types of physical interactions. So the same is true when it comes to interpersonal interactions. What you're saying should be that which comes out of the mouth of a professional. The way you speak to people, it's not a bad idea to have a geder that you don't WhatsApp people at the office. The office email is reserved for that. Not even your own personal email I don't know, I taught in boys' high schools for all the years, so I always had like LeBron James rocks 92 and whatever. So like not even the, besides for that, that's embarrassing. But not your own personal email, but your your professional email. And if there are other people on the team that work with you, and you're going to have to even an email, I would recommend if there are other people on the team that work with you, CC some of the people on the team that just looping in such and such on this conversation. So it serves the benefit of, first of all, you're being more inclusive of more of the people that maybe feel like that they get to be included in the conversation, and second of all, it's obviously not an Isra Yichud to send an email, but it takes away that sense of Yichidus that you have with that person when it's more collaborative with other people. I saw in Rabbi Wasserman's book, one of the women that he interviewed said that she finds that whenever the conversation is lighter and people are just talking about more personal things, she'll always shift to talk about her husband. It's almost like Rabbi Willig used to tell at this question and answer session that we had when I was in college. Rabbi Willig said that men should wear a wedding band in the office because it just sets a tone to remind everyone, to remind everyone around you that I'm taken, right? So this woman said that she finds that when she actually just talks about her husband, it just serves as a reminder that, by the way, I have one of those, meaning that I'm taken, and therefore this conversation should stay within certain barriers. I think it's also important that, you know, there we try to work hard, and you should always try to work hard, and you should always try to do your best. But within any given workday, especially when you're not working remotely, when you're in the office, there are downtimes, and there are times that people get together and have lunch together and things like that. To the extent possible, bring lunch from home and eat lunch by yourself, or with other female coworkers or a larger group of people. I don't think it's a great idea, even though maybe the culture of the workplace to be having downtime where you're just schmoozing over lunch with certainly with someone of the opposite gender. And then, of course, we always have to remember halacha. We have to maintain the highest levels of tznius. There is an isra called an isra yichud. There are actual shilas about yichud. You should have someone that you're able to ask, you know, when a situation comes up, I have a yichud situation, whatever. Nowadays, it's a lot easier to get around a lot of the yichud situations because we have the use of technology can help us a lot of times to get around the yichud if you just put on a Zoom where someone else is on the other end who could just peek in on you every now and then. So it's usually not that difficult to get around the yichud problems. But just being mindful of these things will keep certain barriers within your realm of consciousness, which is, I think, a very helpful thing to do. And again, none of this is to try to be standoffish or to try to be weird or to try to. It's just to try to be a professional. To remember that it's a professional workplace, and as much as you're a human being and everyone around you is a human being and human beings have a natural desire to connect, but to try to always be cognizant of the right kinds of connections to make and the wrong kinds of connections to make. Any questions before we move on? Yeah.
If all your coworkers are going to lunch, would it be better to not go, or maybe you can go and not eat? Would that help?
Well, first of all, if they're going to a non-kosher restaurant, that's a whole separate issue of what you could do at a non-kosher restaurant. You really have to know the situation. But, you know, generally speaking, if it's purely social in nature, it's not a bad idea to set a tone at the beginning that I don't do so things that are purely social. Things that are more business in nature, I'm all in on the business. I'm all in to help the business. I'm all in to work hard and to be a professional and to be kind and to be good. But I'm not here for socializing. So I think it's an important tone to set. It also depends who the coworkers are, right? Meaning you could have a group of very like-minded coworkers who are all I don't know, when I go out with my coworkers to lunch, it's the why you rush a yeshiva. So it's like it's pretty okay usually. The REIT secretary may bring in some sandwiches at some point, but like it's usually that's usually we're cool with that. So you really have to understand the situation and understand just how social of the situation is going to be. One should certainly not have the attitude that everything's okay because this is for work and therefore socially. One should also not have the attitude that it can't happen to me. Like I'm a good person. I'm from. I went to Michlala. Like I can't I'm just picking a name of from school. I don't know. But it can't possibly happen to me. Something like that would. I'm telling you, it could happen to anybody. And unfortunately, we've seen it happen, and we've seen families ripped apart, and we've seen. And if you feel that there's something that's inappropriate or something that's developing that's inappropriate, it is better to quit your job than to go down that road, no matter how good a job it is, because there's no amount of money that will equal the amount of money that you'll have to pay in therapy and divorce and everything else. If things go sour, so it's something to be very, very wary of. And unfortunately, any shul rabbi can tell you, any community rabbi can tell you that they know of situations firsthand of things that happened at the office, at the gym. We're all into working out and being healthy. And don't work out at a co-ed gym. You shouldn't have, people that you hang out with at the gym that are, a woman shouldn't have a male personal trainer, right? I shouldn't need to say, hopefully I don't need to say this. My experience tells me I do need to say this. Those are things that we shouldn't be doing. One has to be very careful about these things.
Yeah. Is it recommended to have the same regard with coworkers of the same gender so that, people who are emailing, are texting Sarah and not texting with
You'll right. Okay. You'll feel out the situation. I mean, I hear that you want to keep all of your relationships very, very professional. I do think, obviously, that it doesn't have to be exactly the same. Meaning, if there's another firm woman that works with you that you just went to 4 years of Stern with, you know, like, I don't think you have to be like, I'm sorry, I don't socialize with coworkers, you know. Like, I think that's, you know, you have to with a lot of this, you have to use your head. You have to use your head. Yeah.
Right. The head of the lab brought in a bottle of champagne.
Right.
So not obviously you're not drinking it. It's not even kosher, but.
Yeah, so that's it. You send a, congratulations, amazing, smiles, all that. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. Meaning you should be very positive. In general, you should always be a positive person. That's not only in the workplace, that's in life in general. You want to be the kind of person that people... Meaning, you have to be careful, because a lot of times when you set up these kinds of gedarim, you end up being like a curmudgeon, that no one wants to be around. You're just like that person who's always like the party pooper and never wants to talk to anybody. You don't want to be that person. So it's a delicate balance. You want to be a positive person. You want to be a smiley person. You want to be a person that people are happy to be around, that people know that they can trust, things like that. At the same time, a professional person. So it is a delicate balance. And by the way, just if I could move away from the office for a second, in general in life, you want to be a happier, meaning if that's the way you should be in the workplace, that's certainly the way you should be at home, and it's certainly the way you should be among your friends and among your family, right? That's always something to strive for. It's always something to work on and to be conscious about. I remember last year, 2 years ago, I brought my Talmidim to Yeshiva Torah V'das at the end of the year to get a Bechina with Rav Yisrael Reisman, Rosh Shiva there. And he gave a Bechina on what we were learning. And then at the end, he said to the guys, he said, most of you guys probably just got married, because I teach the Smicha guys, not the undergrads. So he said, most of you guys probably just got married or will soon be getting married. So let me just give you a little bit of advice, unsolicited. When you come home after a long day, no matter how awful your day was, no matter what went on in yeshiva that day or wherever you were that day, come in with a big smile on your face, bring a ray of sunshine into your house, and when your wife says, "How's your day?" say, "It was fantastic." And then after dinner, you can say, "By the way, we need a new car," or whatever it is that went wrong that day. But it's a good way to be in general. You want to be a positive person. People react well to positive people.
Is it recommended to not shake hands with females so that someone doesn't get into the scenario of men being like, "Why did you not shake hands?"
So the truth is, there are very different attitudes about shaking hands. I don't know if this is going to be the subject of a different class or something. There are very different attitudes. The Stipler held that a man and woman shaking hands is yaharig val yavar. That if someone were to hold a gun to your head and say, "Shake hands with that person or I will kill you," you have to say, "Well, it's been a good run, but..." however, our Rebbeim in Yeshiva, Rav Shechter, Rav Willig, are of the opinion that if it's done in a professional manner, then it's mutter. Meaning again, if it's not done in an affectionate way, it's done in a professional way. Rav Willig said he used to tell people to give the dead fish, that if someone just to stick out his hand, like, let them shake your hand. And then someone told him, no one's ever going to get a job if they do that, right? You do that on a job interview, you're cooked, you're done before you start. So he said. So then he said he should go in for the bone crusher, and then he said, but apparently you don't get too many jobs doing that either. So he said, firm, brisk, quick handshake, and that is fine. Rav Shechter often tells the story. I'll tell the story within the story. Rav Shechter often tells the story of the time that Rav Shimon Shkap, who taught in our yeshiva in 1928 and 1929, so a few years ago, was one of the Gedolei Hadar in Europe, was in America for 2 years to raise money, and Dr. Revel said, "Teach in the yeshiva and I'll give you whatever money you came to raise." So he taught in the yeshiva for 2 years. So Rav Shimon Shkap had a granddaughter who was not so frum, and one time his granddaughter's friend, who was a communist, not frum at all, came over to the apartment, And she said, Zaidi, this is my friend. And the friend stuck out her hand to shake Rav Shimon Shkab's hand. So Rav Shacht always tells the story that Rav Shimon Shkab shook her hand, and that after she left, Rav Shimon said to his granddaughter, it's so sad that a Jewish girl doesn't know enough that she's not supposed to shake a rabbi's hand, but at least I know enough that I'm not supposed to embarrass somebody who sticks out their hand. Right, that was the story. So now the story within the story. I told that story in the shir, and one day I got a phone call out of the blue. I picked up the phone and said, hello. The person said, is this Rabbi Leibowitz? I said, yes. I said, this is Kalman Epstein. So Rav Kalman Epstein is the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Shara Torah in Queens. It's a very chashuva yeshiva. He's also an einikol of Rav Shimon Shkab. He's a grandchild of Rav Shimon Shkab. So he said, someone told me that you told the story about the Zayda, that he shook a woman's hand. How do you tell such horrible stories? How can you say such a story about, you know, that Zayda shaking? Yeah, but what? Because of the granddaughter? You think of who the source of the story is. Why would you trust that granddaughter who had an agenda and who obviously is telling, like, why would you tell such stories? So I'm like, oh boy. But it was my story. Rav Shechter told the story. So I said, I hear, it was my story. Rav Shechter tells the story all the time, so maybe take it up with Rav Shechter. You know, like, so he said, I will. So I said, okay, fine. So I asked Rav Shechter sometime later if Rav Kalman ever called him. He said, no. I was then, like a week later, or 2 weeks later, I was having lunch with someone on Shabbos, you know, having Shabbos suda with somebody, and the person was telling me that they were very close with the Epsteins, with Rav Kalman Epstein, with Rav Zelig Epstein. Rav Kalman's father was one of the Gedolei Hador, was the Pikeach Hador, he was known as an exceptionally wise person. And this person told me that I was having lunch with, he said, yeah, I used to drive Rav Zelig to yeshiva all the time. Rav Kalman's father, the great Gaon, Rav Zelig Epstein, he used to drive him to yeshiva all the time. And I said, oh, did you ever hear this story? I told him the story, and Rav Kalman called me out on it. He goes, oh yeah, Rav Zelig used to tell that story all the time. So I said, okay, do me a favor. Next time you see Rav Kalman, tell him that Rav Zelig used to tell you that story all the time, that it's, you know, that his own father used to tell that story. So he called me back. He said he told Rav Zelig, he told Rav Kalman that Rav Zelig used to tell the story all the time. And Rav Kalman said, I know my father used to tell that story. I used to tell him not to tell the story also. I don't think it's wise for anybody to tell that story. Not for him, not for it. So anyway, but or at least it means someone in the family was listening to my shiur. I found out who it was. Rabbi Zin Ismach, you know, whatever. Okay, so Kalman's daughter. So, question?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't record
these minutes. Yeah, I'm finished with the story. I think I've finished all my time here already. But
I wanted to know about explaining Yiddishkeit and Halacha to people who
Okay.
Right.
So one actually does have to be careful about this. There is the Gemara has a drasha from a pasuk that Marasha Kilas Yaakov Al Tikri Marasha El Ma'orasa, that it's also to teach Torah to non-Jews. So one has to be careful about teaching Torah. Very basic explanations are perfectly fine. Anything that's in Torah Shebichsav is perfectly fine, although be careful, they may know it better than you. You know, when you keep it simple and you keep it to Torah Shebichsav, it should be fine. But to get into too detailed of a teaching of something is probably not a great idea and might violate the halacha. Most important is to just be a normal, refined person. And that's what ultimately sets the example. If they ask, you know, why do you need to take off from work next week? And you say, oh, it's actually in the Bible that there is a holiday around this time of year where we sit in huts and whatever, and you may notice them around, you know, around your neighborhood or around Manhattan or something. You know, and because that's all explicit in the Torah that you're allowed to... So that's easy enough. Meaning that's modesty, that we have a requirement to dress in a modest way. We try to dress modestly, but also in a way that's nice and you know, and refined, and you know, and we feel that this strikes that balance. That wearing a skirt strikes that balance. Meaning, they might say, well, pants can be very modest. And they're right, you know. So, but what do you say? It's not the yeshivish thing to do, you know. Like, you know, like someone asked me if they can wear ski pants. If a woman can wear ski, meaning without, obviously she's going to wear ski pants. But the question is whether to wear a skirt over it or not to wear a skirt over the ski pants. So Meikar Adin, I don't know. I assume ski pants are like very bulky and not particularly form fitting or, you know, attractive. So Meikar Adin. Yeah, it's probably fine. Is it the yeshivish thing to do? I don't know. I don't know how to measure those things. But if it's not, you know, it's not beged-ish, and it's not something that. So you know, you could just say the truth, which is that we try to dress in a way that is modest, and I think people appreciate that. Meaning, even if they don't have the kochos hanefesh to do it themselves, I find a lot of times when we do gerus, we'll ask. Like 70% of the gerim are women, happens to me. Women are just more spiritually inclined, I think. So so when we do gerim, a lot of times we'll ask, like, what are your thoughts about tznius? And many of them will say, oh, I was doing tznius way before I was even thinking about Judaism. Meaning, like, they have this sense of dignity, the sense of wanting to be, you know, to be very, you know, to be more refined. I think people could appreciate it, even if they have a yetzer hara to not do it themselves. I think people could appreciate that.
If someone's in a situation where they're with like Jews and non-Jews, would they be able to like share Torah and hold stuff? Like,
yeah, so there's a tshuva from the Sri Deyesh. Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg was a great gadol and a big thinker, a free thinker. He was a very independent-minded person, and he taught in university. He taught Talmud in university, and not like Yeshiva University. He taught to non-Jewish students as well. So he writes a tshuva where he explains why he thinks that that's mutter to do, that you're allowed to teach the class when there, as long as there are Jews in the class, and that's your best chance of being marbitz Torah to the Jewish people. You have to be careful though sometimes, because you can't choose who's going to be the most interested. So you may have a group of five people, and you're thinking of, you know, that Jewish person that just needs a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of inspiration, and meanwhile you inspired someone who's not Jewish, or someone who thinks they're Jewish and isn't Jewish, and that's where it gets really complicated. By the way, in terms of office relationships, when you get invited to weddings and things like that, and it's an intermarriage, and you're not even allowed to say mazel tov on an intermarriage. You're not allowed to say congratulate. You're not allowed to do anything to encourage an intermarriage. So you have to be very, very careful. And it's worthwhile, if you see it coming, to speak to someone in advance about, instead of freezing in the moment and saying the absolute wrong thing, you know, to speak to someone in advance about the right things to say and about how to formulate things. Right.
And, like, she knew things to begin with. Like, it wasn't, like, she right. asking very specific questions. She told me that, like, the 90s were starting, like, she needed me. Like, she really knew a lot.
Right.
So, like, and I never knew how to, like what to tell her about it.
So, when it comes to the conversion process, the halach is that the Beis Din has to push away the convert at first and make it, you know, make it clear that you'll go to heaven even if you don't convert, and that, you know, and it's a really hard process and you don't need to be doing this and all of that. What I find is that the Beis Din often does such a good job of that, that the person could really use a little chizuk from the people that they interact with regularly. And a lot of times as a Beis Din will tell people that they interact with regularly, look, we were, you know, we pushed a little hard. Make sure that there's some, you know, that there's a Yamin Makareves also, that there's someone there to be in a supportive role. You can ask questions, you know, have you thought about contacting a Beit Din? Do you know what's involved, you know, in terms of, you know, it's an irreversible kind of commitment. You can, so I think that's fine. When a person is actually seriously studying for conversion, you're actually allowed to teach them Torah, because there's no other option. Meaning, the day that a person converts, they're expected to observe the entirety of Torah. They're expected to live an Orthodox Jewish life. That is not possible unless you did a lot of learning in advance, right? It's not possible to live a fully Orthodox Jewish life unless you've already been Shomer Shabbos for like a year. Meaning it's not really doable. So that's why with conversion candidates we do that all the time. That will be few and far between probably in a work setting that you're dealing with conversion candidates.
Me?
Yeah.
Thank you. What about in today's world when one interacts with different types of people and everyone's very progressive and pluralistic? Being intellectually honest, I mean, at the same time being open-minded, but not giving off the impression like, oh, you do your thing and that's the right thing for you and I do my thing. Because that's not honest. It might sound nice, but it's not.
Right. So you don't always have to be, you don't, not everything that's true needs to be said. Meaning, you shouldn't say something that's untrue, and there are certain conversation topics that are probably much, much wiser to avoid.
If they ask me, like, what do you think about X?
So I would say if it's something that you could see going in a very bad direction, I would say I'm really uncomfortable talking about that. Meaning when you tell someone explicitly, I'm uncomfortable in this conversation, it takes a certain kind of awful person to, you know, to push that conversation, right?
But if it's more like giving off the impression that each one has the freedom to have their own lifestyle and do whatever they want.
I think it's okay to give off the impression that I will never judge you as a person for, you know, the things that you do. As far as I'm concerned, you're my coworker and I value you and I'm not judging you for that. But don't ask my opinion because I'm not comfortable talking about that.
That experience, not with like lunches that are professional or social, they're more in the middle where they're interfaith dialogues or they want to include the Jewish community, so they'll create an event to include us and they'll order kosher food and they're very excited about it.
In what setting? What kind of business?
In like a corporate company.
Okay.
And they'll have these interfaith lunches or something like that.
And they'll call it an interfaith lunch in a corporate setting?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. They're very into like diversity, including everyone, everyone's got a place.
Right.
They create these lunches, and they, or they'll have a Jewish lunch, and they'll invite all the other people to come and experience what Judaism is like.
Uh-huh. You can make up so much fun stuff, right? Yeah. Pesach Seder, you blow the shofar. Rabbi Fran tells a story of a guy who had a business meeting in New York many years ago, like in the 70s, when Shmuelke Bernstein's was the, you know, kosher place or whatever. So, and they said, we want to order dinner for you when you come into the office. And he said, no, don't worry about it. Really, it's fine. And they said, no, we know you're kosher. We're going to do it. And they ordered dinner for him, and it was right before Pesach time. And they told him, we called the place, the kosher place. It was the most kosher place. Then they asked us, do you want to choose from the regular menu or the Passover menu? And we said, oh, it's going to be super kosher. We're going to choose the Passover menu. And they brought out a Seder plate. Shank bone and roasted egg. So, you know, sometimes. Yeah, so what's the question? I'm sorry.
So because it's not like a social thing, but it's also not a professional thing. It's more like that middle where they want to create a space for you. It's a weird middle.
Right.
I
think you should always be grateful, meaning always be gracious. So if they're trying to be nice, so don't say, I don't like you being nice to me. You know, like, if they're trying to be nice, so appreciate that and acknowledge that. At the same time, they don't know everything that's involved in Judaism. Most of the Jews don't know everything that's involved in Judaism. So you don't have to go start oversharing about everything, you know, all that is Jewish in these contexts. You know, as far as they know, bagels and lox. You know, that's Jewish. And that's it. You know, that's what, unfortunately, most of the Jews don't know much more than that. So, yeah, I wouldn't overshare, but extremely gracious, especially when people are making an effort to make you comfortable, as uncomfortable as it makes you.
In my office, they had a ping pong table, and like people would just play games throughout the day. Like, is there any problem with just like playing a game with your coworkers if it's like totally fun?
I remember I took a tour of Google when I was in Palo Alto once. My brother lives in San Jose, so we took a tour of Google, and it looked like it was a playground. It wasn't an office. It was like, but that, like, that's the golden handcuffs, right? Meaning that's like, they have your dry cleaning there for you. They have everything you could possibly want to eat. You never have a reason to leave, right? And that's like, that's the idea, that you never have a reason to leave. So that's terrible. You know, the person's whole life revolves around that. Look, if you need to blow off steam, but again, I would be careful about who you're playing with, and, you know, meaning that's clearly a social kind of interaction.
Jewish, not
so I get the shaila every now and then. You know, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the shaila about someone who owns a wedding hall and renting out the hall to a couple to for a wedding where there's going to be mixed dancing. So Rav Moshe thought it was mutter. He didn't think that that's lifnei iver on the mixed dancing. Any more than, let's say, if you own a wedding hall and you suspect that people around the tables during the dinner might speak Lashon Hara with each other. Right? So is it lifnei iver on Lashon Hara when you rent out a wedding hall? Because, you know, there are Jews that might be talking to each other and there's a good chance it's going to be Lashon Hara. So that's not what you're doing. You're not there to take provocative pictures. You're not there to take, you're there to take pictures. This is the way they interact with each other. This is the way they behave. Yeah, leave it at that. It could get trickier with a photographer because a photographer very often poses a couple and tells them exactly where to put their hands and what to, you know, and especially if it's, if it's more of a romantic setting, you know, because it's wedding pictures and things like that. It could get a little tricky. That could be a little worse. Yeah, could get a little tricky. Yeah.
I worked in a non-Jewish school this semester, and I had situations where I had to help out with, like, projects or activities that had to do with, like, Christmas and Halloween. So would that be problematic to, like, actively be a part of, like, the, like, arts and crafts or, like, whatever they were doing?
It could be. I would sooner stick with Halloween than the Christmas because Halloween is a completely secularized holiday, even though it really has its roots in Avodah Zarah. Christmas is only 80% secularized. You know, it's not entirely secularized yet. If you're drawing a picture of a big fat man in a red suit with a white beard, you know, there's nothing religious in any religion about that. That's not really based on anything. But, if to the extent that you can, I would try to steer clear of, you know, certainly symbols of other religions and things of that nature.
My cousin worked at, like, an accounting office, and for his birthday, like, his coworkers were very, very excited, and they got him a kosher cake, and they all planned it, and they, like, surprised him with it, but it was from, like, a hashtag that he doesn't eat. And, like, they were all, like, waiting for him, like, they were, like, really excited. I don't remember what he did. I think he said, like, his stomach was hurting or something. Yeah. I think he, like, really let them down. Like, it was, like, a big, like, felt really bad, but he told the whole family, like, so what, like,
there are some no-win situations. There are some no-win situations. I don't think it's a good precedent to set to start lowering your standards of kashrus because of that pressure, because that could quickly turn into something else. There are some no-win situations. Hopefully, in most cases, the coworkers would say, you know, would start feeling around a little bit by asking, you know, like, what's your favorite bakery? Like, you know, where do you know, what's a kosher symbol that you would trust or something like that. But there are some difficult moments. The most common situation is that they're kind enough to order you dinner, and then they're also kind enough to open it for you, right, and take off all the wrapping and everything. But that one's easier to get around, though, because the concern is that the reason you need chosamos on a sealed delivery is not because we're afraid that they're going to drop pig juice in it. You know, it's the concern is that they're just giving you something that's not from a kosher restaurant. So as long as a Jewish person could look at that food and say, oh yeah, I packed that food, I know what that food is, so and recognizes it, so it's okay. So I'll often tell people, just call the mashkiach at the restaurant, send them a picture of the food and say, haker na, is this your food? And if he says, yeah, this is my, yeah, that's what we packed up, so then I think that's good enough. I remember we had that shaila in DRS once when I was teaching in DRS. One of the Rebbeim used to have Chalent Friday. So boys would bring Chalent in from their homes every Friday, which is an interesting policy. I don't remember, like, why we allowed that. But they would bring Chalent from their homes. So one DRS is in the five towns, and not every boy from in the yeshiva was so poor. So there was one boy who forgot to bring his Chalent, so his parents sent their driver. And he came in, like, this giant black, you know, SUV with, like, a thing in his ear, like, sunglasses on. And he comes over and he goes, I have, I'll make up a name, I have Shloimeh's Cholent over here. But there was no hecker on it, there was no sign in it. So we sent to the housekeeper, is this your Cholent? And she said, yes. No, I'm just joking. Sent to the mother, and she said it was her Cholent. Okay, yeah. I think Rav Schachter gave a very impractical etza on this. We asked him, he said, season's greetings. I'll sound like a card. Like a human. If you say season's greetings. First of all, probably best not to initiate, but you do need to respond. So all the best to you and your family also. Something like that. You know, you could do it in a way where you take the religion out of it.
Say happy holidays to you. Happy New Year.
If it's obvious which holidays you're referring to, it could be that it's a Happy New Year could be an issue also, even though Jews make New Year's parties and kosher restaurants and things like that, you know. But if we knew the history of New Year's and these holidays, it's like mind-blowing. Can you imagine, like, I mean, it is literally like, imagine in a few generations from now, you know, people celebrating, Hitler Day or whatever. Like, it's like what the Christians did on these holidays to the Jewish people historically, and what they were an excuse for is like, for us, we should just be like a little more aware in a world where of rising anti-Semitism and everything else. Just like be a little more aware of what the history of this was. I think it would be hard for us to, but again, kind and pleasant and whatever, but I would stay away from holiday talk.
Is that YouTube a problem? Like, if someone
says, YouTube? Yeah, again, I think there are ways to do it. Meaning, is it a real problem? Probably not, but the best way to do it is all the best to you and your family. You know? enjoy the time with the kids and the grandkids. It's probably going to be so lovely. You know, you could say all sorts of nice things, you know, that... You know, they're not going to say Merry Christmas. Say, you know, like, you know, you won't have to say it. You don't have to say it. Yeah.
Is there an issue with, like, if there's a guy that, like, knows a lot about music, and they want to be like, I know a lot of people, like, the jerk, like,
the flex. Sorry, I'm joking here. Is there any, Oh, yes. One second. Thank you. Halacha, you don't say a bracha in this situation. A non-Jew who knows a lot about Jewish people and say again?
They wish you a good Shabbos. A lot of times, like, the jerk reflexes to say good Shabbos back. Is that an issue?
I no.
Also with, like, security guards here.
I think that's fine. I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's a problem.
Because we're taking food from home because we're now antisocial. I knew that this summer I had a lot of issues with the fridge. Can you just go through what the kalachos are keeping kosher food in a mixed fridge?
Okay, so maybe I won't get involved. It's not that hard. It's not that hard.
What about, like, holiday parties or like
office? Right, so holiday parties traditionally used to be the place you get your bonus. So you couldn't not go. So you would go and you would smile at people and go for a few minutes and be pleasant and then leave, you know, make a whole night of it. I think that was always the guidance that we got about holiday parties. That's it. Let's see. Was there anything else? Making Kiddush Hashem. Is it time already? Maybe two more minutes about making Kiddush Hashem, because that was one of the requests. You just don't want to ask questions. You don't want to choke me. I appreciate that. But making a Kiddush Hashem and being careful so they don't perceive Jews badly. The Gemara talks about promoting a sense that when someone sees a Ben or Bas Torah, they should say, Ashrei mi shelimdo Torah, that, wow, what a wonderful way to live life. What a beautiful way to live this is. This is, fortunate to someone who raised a person like this. We should always try to promote that sense of, like, I'm a, you know, well-adjusted, cheerful, kind, compassionate person. And that's a universal human language. Everyone could appreciate that. It's okay to be different. meaning it's fine that you're different, and you should be different, meaning if you get to the point where no one would ever recommend doing something dishonest in your presence because you live life with radical integrity, and they know that, that's okay. If you get to a point where people in the office don't want to curse around you because, you know, you're a holy person, that's okay. I mean, it's okay to be different in that sense. It's not a great idea to just talk like everybody else talks and to, but again, kindness, go out of your way to be nice. Say nice things to people. I've mentioned many times, some of you may have heard from me, we asked Rav Rimon when he was in my shul for a Shabbos, like, what's like an easy mitzvah for people to do that they, you know, that if they would just think of it as a mitzvah, they would do it more often. He said, give people compliments, like all the time. So generally speaking, when it comes to enough, sorry,
I think.
I will use it, so thank you. generally speaking, there is gratuitous compliments are really a slight halachic issue with Nachrim, but nevertheless, when it's someone that you know and it's people that you interact with, there's no doubt that you should go out of your way to be nice, say nice things to people, be flexible. People need more hours on a Sunday, and you can't give any hours on a Saturday or something like that. So be the one that they know that they can come to because you're going to be flexible. Like I said before, it's not a great idea to talk politics or to talk about, you know, very hot button issues. Although, you know, when something, it should never happen again, but when something like October 7th happens, it is okay for your coworkers to know that you're in pain. I think that's okay, meaning that's part of being a Jew, and they should know that that it's not just somewhere else in the world where it's where you don't have a sense of it. Obviously, it shouldn't dominate the way you work and your whole workday and all of your interactions. But it's okay for people to be aware of it. A lot of people have told me that their coworkers have gone over to them and you know, just to give words of encouragement and non-Jews just to because they know, because they understand that it's that if every time when you take 2 weeks vacation you're in Israel, they chap, right? They realize that you have like a real connection there, and that's okay. That's fine. So again, I think the key is when it comes to making Kiddush Hashem, is that it's perfectly okay to be different, and it's critical to be perceived as someone who's kind, who's generous, who has integrity. You know, we're an Am Kadosh, and people should appreciate that. Okay, any further questions? No? Okay, have a wonderful evening, everybody. And thank you for the save.